I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man, and I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time, and here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly straight into your living room, your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. Hello, 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 Lou.
Hello, 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 Lou.
Little Miss Honey, how are you today?
Oh, I'm just fine. Did you have an exciting 4th of July?
Oh, you bet I did.
Did you fire any firecrackers?
No, I didn't have to. The children in my neighborhood made so much racket with theirs, I didn't need to fire any.
Well, I did.
Well, were you careful with them?
Oh, yes, I was very careful. I put them on the ground first, see?
Yeah.
Then I got myself a long stick, see?
Yeah.
And then I put a little sort of lighting torch on the end of the stick, see?
Mm-hmm.
And then my father lighted the torch with a match, see?
Ah, yes.
And I was at the other end of the long stick, so I was so far from the firecrackers I couldn't get hurt by them.
Oh, that was a wonderful idea.
Yes, and I couldn't hurt anybody else with the firecrackers because I didn't light them and then throw them where some people do.
Well, I think you should get a special kind of medal for safety.
Thank you. Well, you should be careful when you're using things that are explosive or dangerous.
Yes, you should, and I'm glad that you were.
So am I. Now, could you please read me the funny?
Puck the Comic Weekly?
Yes.
Very well, I'll read that in just a moment. But before I do, let's listen to this nice man. Now, here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the first page, under Bringing Up Father, Beetle Bailey.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Toot me a toot and tweet me a tweedle. Squeeze out music for Bailey the Beetle. Today, General Halftrack is on the telephone.
This is General Halftrack. Is Captain Scabbard there?
And at the other end of the line, Beetle answers...
No, sir, but if you'll hold the phone, I'll go look for him.
Beetle puts down the phone and dashes out of the office to look for Captain Scabbard. And then another door opens. And in comes Captain Scabbard with the sergeant.
I just have to see that ball game today.
Last picture top row, the sergeant says...
Yeah, but Captain, the general is coming to inspect the area today.
Captain Scabbard opens a desk drawer right beside the phone to get his tickets for the ball game.
Oh, you can handle the old goat.
First picture bottom row, he puts his cap on.
Tell him I went to the hospital with a split infinitive.
And the sergeant, who is standing right beside the phone, laughs.
Oh, yeah, he's so stupid, he'd believe it.
And then the two men walk out of the office.
Yeah, just butter him up. Tell him how well organized the camp is.
And then, in the other door, dashes Beetle. He picks up the receiver, which has been lying on the table.
Hello? I couldn't find him, sir.
Never mind. I know where he is.
Beetle hangs up the phone.
And why the heck did he make me run all over the camp looking?
Last picture, we're at the ball game. Two military police have dragged the captain out of his seat.
And what shall we do with him, General?
And the general sits down in the captain's seat and watching the ball game answers,
split his infinitive and lock him in a hospital room.
And the captain shakes his head sadly and groans,
somebody talk.
Three strikes and you're out.
That was a good joke on the captain. He didn't notice that the receiver was off the hook in his office, and all the things he said about the general went right into the telephone.
And right into the general's ear, because he was at the other end of the line listening.
I'll bet you he'll be sorry when the general gets back from the ball game.
He's already sorry.
Yes, because the general's sitting in his seat at the ball game.
Yes. Well, now I know you're anxious to see what happens next in Walt Disney's story, The Sword and the Rose.
Oh, yes, I am.
All right, let's turn over the page and go past Little Iodine and past Prince Val on page 3. Turn over page 3. And here we are on page 4 with The Sword and the Rose.
Yes, and you remember that Charles Brandon, who is handsome and brave and daring, has been made a captain of the guards at King Henry's court.
Yes, this is back in the early days of English history.
And it was because the king's sister, Mary, liked Charles Brandon that the king made Charles Brandon captain of the guards.
Yes, I think Princess Mary is very fond of the Charles Brandon.
So do I. I wonder what'll happen next.
Well, let's read and find out. Here we go with the sword and the rose. It's merry, merry England when knighthood was in flower. Music to bewitch our story hour. It's a beautiful day, and King Henry and a group of his nobles and guardsmen have gone into the green countryside to hunt. In the sky overhead, birds are flying. Now, King Henry had given his men orders to practice archery. He shouts,
"Now we'll see who has been obeying my edict to practice archery. Ready your bows."
The nobles take aim at the flying birds. They fire, but not a bird is struck. The king shouts,
"Fire, you bunglers! Oh, Master Brandon there, see if you can do any better."
"Yes, sir, with your leave, sire." Brandon takes careful aim. And the bird falls to the ground, last picture, top row.
"Boldly shot, Brandon. All right, you bunglers, try again. See if you can do as well as Master Brandon here."
First picture, bottom row, a short distance away, there's a rustling in the bushes. It's the king's sister, Mary, who is watching the archery contest with eyes only for Charles Brandon. Mary thinks to herself, "It seems that Master Brandon does everything well, except to pay any attention to me." A little later, as the king's party returns to the castle, Brandon, who is bringing up the rear, hears the furious drumming of hoofs behind him. And then a second later, the horse with his rider gallops past.
"Why, it's the princess, and her horse is bolting."
Quickly, Brandon takes out after the runaway.
Charles Brandon made?
Yes, after everybody had missed, he takes aim and bang, the bird drops.
And they all went bang, 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 and not even one bird dropped.
Mm-hmm. That should show the king who's been practicing archery.
Yes, Charles Brandon. Look how bravely he rode after the princess on that runaway horse. That's dangerous.
Yes, it is.
I wonder if he'll catch up to her and save her.
Well, we'll find that out next week. But now let's go across the page, turn over page 5, across over past page 6, and here on page 7 is Roy Rogers.
Yes, and you remember that somebody had robbed the railroad payroll and the trail led to the carnival and a man named Mike Coe.
Yes, and just as Mike Coe was going to confess everything to Roy, two crooks named Ham and Smiley rolled the tiger cage down the hill onto Mike's tent, hoping the tiger would kill Roy and Mike Coe.
And it did kill Mike Coe, and last week it was just going to leap at Roy, and Roy's eyes were blinded with smoke so he couldn't see the chute. I wonder what'll happen.
Well, let's read now and find out. Here we go with Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys. Hi-yip-i-yo, now here we go with Roy and Trigger. Hi-yip-i-yo. The carnival fire spreads rapidly. Roy's eyes are blinded from the smoke. And then the tiger roars and leaps. Quickly, Roy pulls his 6-gun and fires at the sound of the tiger. Tiger falls to the ground in front of Roy. Dead. Dangerfield, the owner of the carnival, exclaims, third picture, top row,
"Excellent shooting, Roy. Now, men, extinguish that fire before it spreads. J. Lucian Dangerfield's colossal spectacle must not be destroyed."
Last picture, top row. Roy is washing his smoke-stained eyes.
"Well, thanks for the water, Wildwood. Reckon Mike Coe is dead under the tent. He didn't get a chance to name his accomplices in that railroad payroll robbery."
First picture, bottom row, Jimmy, one of the boys at the carnival, tells Roy,
"Hey, Roy, I saw two strange riders sneaking off the carny grounds just before the fire started."
"Okay, Jimmy. They might have had something to do with a tiger wagon rolling into Mike's tent. Why would I want to visit the railroad camp where the robbery occurred? I got a hunch."
Later, at the railroad construction camp, third picture, bottom row, the two crooks, Ham and Smiley, are reporting to their boss.
"Yeah, Smiley and me took care of Mike Coe before he told Rogers anything, boss."
"Well, good work, Ham. All right, let's go to my shack where we can talk."
Last picture, Ham says,
"Hey, hold it. Here comes that meddling cowpoke, Roy Rogers, now."
Maybe he knows more than you figure. Keep back. I'll handle him."
Yes, he shot in the direction of the tiger's roar, and one of his shots made a lucky hit.
But now look what's happening. Roy's riding right into trouble again, and there are three crooks against him this time, and they look mean and dangerous, especially the one with that great big hammer in his hand. I wonder what'll happen.
We'll find out next week. Now let's turn over the page. And here on the last page of the first section is Flash Gordon, who has just landed on a new planet called Titan.
And everything they found on that planet is bigger than anything they've ever seen before.
And you remember that we saw the hand of a giant reach out and pick up the matchbook that Midas dropped last week?
Yes. I wonder what else they'll find. If there are giants, then they'll be in danger.
Well, let's read now and find out. Here we go with Flash Gordon. Rig-a-rig-a-doon-doon, saskamatash. Let's have music for Heroic Flash. Flash and his party move cautiously through the tall grass, not knowing what to expect. Flash sees Midas, who is leading the party, stop and make an excited gesture. Hey, there's Midas up ahead. He's excited, as if he's found something. Come on. A minute later, they're in front of a cave, last picture top row. Midas points to the ground.
Hey, look over here. Big clay pots. The remains of a bonfire. Huge bones and a sword.
Flash says, hey, this isn't a sword, Midas. It's a knife. A tremendous knife.
Help! Help!
Hey, what's that?
Help!
First picture, bottom row, the pilot shouts.
Hey, it's Smith, our engineer. He was standing near that undergrowth a moment ago.
Yeah, and look. Something's dragging him away through the bushes. There he is, lying by that rock. Hey, Smith. Smith, you all right? What happened? What was it?
I don't know. It was big. With big hands.
Well, whatever it was, it's probably far away by now, Flash. But behind them, the head of a giant peers over the rock at the three of them.
We were right. There are giants there. And look how big this giant is.
Yes, why, just his head seems to be as big as a whole man.
Yes, he looks as if he could reach over and crush all three of them with one blow.
And they don't know that the danger is there behind them.
I wonder what'll happen.
Well, we'll find that out next week. But now it's time to pick up the first page of the second section.
Oh, and there's that funny, funny Dagwood.
And I'll read that funny, funny Dagwood in just a moment. But first, here's that nice man again with something interesting to say. Now here we go again with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the first page of the second section, Dagwood and Blondie.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Ramafoo, ramafum, zim, zam, zombie. Conjure me music for Dagwood and Blondie. The Bumsteads are painting their house. The smell of paint is so strong that the Woodleys, their neighbors, have invited the Bumsteads to spend the night at their house. So last picture, top row, Blondie settles into bed in the Woodley house, saying,
aren't the Woodleys sweet to let us sleep over here while our house is being painted?
Yeah, but I'm getting hungry.
Fifteen minutes later, Herb Woodley hears Dagwood in the kitchen. And by the time you can go, Herb is in the kitchen, too. He sees that Dagwood has made one of his famous sandwiches.
Hey, what on earth is that?
One of my special sandwiches. Want me to make you one, too?
Yeah.
So Dagwood lays out several slices of bread, slaps on some butter, peanut butter, sardines, jelly, cheese, onion, and pickle lily. And last picture, second row, Herb takes a bite of it.
Well, how do you like it, Herb?
Why, I've never tasted anything quite like it before.
An hour later, Herb wakes up.
Oh.
Well, what's the matter, Herb?
No, my stomach.
And then he gets a terrific pain.
Oh.
And then another one.
Oh. Oh. My stomach is turning head springs. Oh.
A moment later, Dagwood is outside the door yelling,
Herb, Herb, what's the matter?
And then, and Herb is dashing down the stairs after Dagwood. Down the hall they go. Through the living room. Through the dining room. Out the door.
You try to poison me!
And Herb makes a leap and tackles Dagwood.
And last picture, third row, Herb is sitting on Dagwood, throttling him.
Come on now, what was in that sandwich?
Honest, Herb, it was just onion and peanut butter and sardines and jelly and cheese and pickle lily and...
Oh, the thought of it makes me sick again. I gotta get back to bed again.
And Herb gets up and walks to the door. First picture, bottom row, he exclaims,
fine thing. Now our wives are disgusted with us and locked us out.
Dagwood gets to his feet.
Hey, you're lucky you live right next door to me, Herb. We can sleep in our house.
Well, what about that smell of new paint?
It won't bother us, Herb. We're pals.
And last picture, Dagwood and Herb are in bed together with clothespins over their noses to shut out the smell of paint. And Herb growls,
a billion people in the world, can I have you as a neighbor?
Gee, thanks, Herb.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. Dagwood's sandwich made Herb sick, and when the women heard the men fighting outside, they locked them out. And now they have to sleep in the house with a new paint.
Yeah, they certainly look funny with their clothespins over their noses.
Yes, and I don't see how they don't get much sleep that way.
Neither do I. Well, now let's turn over the page and see what we find.
All right. Oh, look, on page 3, there's Donald Duck, my favorite.
And we'll read your favorite right now. Here we go with Donald Duck. Say the magic words with me. Squeege him, squeege him, squiddy, take a check. Let's have music to beat a quack, quack. Donald and his girlfriend, Daisy, are going out on a date, and Daisy is saying to Donald,
lose that temper once more, and we're done.
Yes, Daisy, darling.
A few minutes later, they're in Donald's car, buzzing down the road.
Now remember, this is our last date if you lose your temper.
Yes, Daisy, darling.
Donald sees a red light, and he comes to a stop. The car behind him slams on its brakes and rolls right into Donald. Donald calls back to the driver behind him.
Sorry, sir. I shouldn't have stopped just for a red light.
Half hour later, Donald and Daisy are in a fashionable restaurant. The waiter spills hot soup all over Donald's head.
Oops, my fault.
Oh, think nothing of it, waiter. Anybody can spill a bowl of soup.
Short time later, Donald and Daisy are walking down the street. A man is eating a banana. He tosses the peel to the street. Donald steps on it. His feet slip out from under him.
Oh, precious. There must be a banana tree around here.
A short time later, first picture bottom row, Donald is standing in line at the theater box office. A man ahead of him steps back on Donald's foot.
Uh-oh.
Donald taps him on the back.
Pardon me, sir. My foot seems to have slipped under yours.
Two hours later, third picture bottom row, Daisy is saying goodnight to Donald.
Well, goodnight, Donald. You did beautifully.
No effort at all, my dear. Good night, Daisy. Darling.
Half hour later, Donald's car comes to a stop 10 miles out of town. Donald jumps out of the car, stands on the edge of a cliff, and he shouts at the moon,
I hate people who are stupid drivers. I hate people who are stupid waiters. I hate people who throw away banana peels. I hate people. Period.
Wasn't that funny? No matter what happens to him, Donald is polite to everybody.
Yeah. And then he takes his girlfriend Daisy home.
Then he drives out into the country and loses his temper where Daisy can't hear him.
Oh, that Donald, he's some fellow.
Yes, that Donald, he's some fellow.
Well, now I'm sure you'd like to know what's happening with Dick's adventures.
Oh, yes, I would.
All right, then, let's turn to the very last page of the Comic Weekly. And here he is.
Yes, and you remember that Dick is in the early days of America with his friend Robert Fulton, who's just invented the first steamboat.
That's right.
The people said that it wouldn't work.
And so Robert Fulton has challenged the fastest sailing vessel to race his steamboat.
But that's to prove his steamboat is faster than a sailing ship.
That's right.
I wonder who's going to win.
Well, let's read now and find out. Here we go with Dick's Adventures. Say the magic words with me.
Riggedy pack a zack a zick.
Let's have music for Adventurous Dick. The year is 1807. On the river, the race between the sailing vessel and the first steamboat is underway. Last picture, top row, Robert Fulton says,
Dick, you don't realize what this means to me. We lose this race against the sail yacht. All America will say steamboats are a failure.
Oh, but I'm sure you won't lose, sir.
Yet Dick seems to be wrong. First picture, second row, with all the sails set and a favoring wind, the sailing yacht breezes ahead. The whole crew jeering at Fulton. And then it disappears swiftly around the bend in the river. Fulton shakes his head.
Oh, we're beaten, Dick. Beaten. It's useless to build up the fire. The best we can do is 4 miles an hour. The sailing yacht is doing twice that. Well, we'll wash up and get back to our guests.
But at nightfall, the wind dies. And as Fulton's boat comes around the bend in the river, Dick looks ahead. And he sees the sailing yacht standing still in the moonlight, her sails hanging limp. Dick shouts,
We're winning, sir! The sailboats have lost their race forever!
Fulton shoots Dick a look of astonishment. Why, how do you know, Dick? And Dick only repeats,
They're beaten forever, sir! Forever!
First picture, bottom row. As crowds cheer wildly, Robert Fulton's Clermont puffs and churns proudly into New York Harbor. A river monster, as the people called it, wins its race. And Dick is shouting,
Yes, sir. From now on, there's only going to be steamboats. I know it. I know it. I know it.
And then, last picture, Dick looks around and sees he's in his own room and his own home in the world of today.
It's not 1807 anymore. Oh, gosh. I must have been dreaming again.
Exciting? Robert Fulton proved that his steamboat was the best because you could depend on it to keep going.
Yes, while the sailing vessels could only keep going if there was a wind to carry them along.
And when there was no wind, they would just sit there in the middle of the water doing nothing. And you can't get any place that way.
No, you can't get any place that way. Well, now let's look underneath Dick's adventures. There's Rusty Riley.
Oh, yes. And you remember that last week Rusty and Tex were getting ready to start back from Milestone Farm with Silver Lad. That's that wonderful racehorse that Mr. Miles has just bought.
Yes, but a man named Velvet Kane doesn't want Silver Lad to get to the Milestone Farm because he doesn't want Mr. Miles to raise horses that'll be better than his.
Yes, and he wants his men to see to it that Tex and Rusty do not bring Silver Lad to the Milestone Farm. This could be dangerous.
Yes. Well, let's read now and find out. Here we go with Rusty Riley. Gallop and run till the road is dusty. Give us music for his horse and Rusty. It's early in the morning, and Rusty and Tex have loaded Silver Lad and the other horse in the truck and are starting out for home again.
Oh, golly, Tex, it sure makes me feel good to be starting back to Milestone Farm again.
Well, it's where you belong, Rusty. And Mr. Miles and Patty will be right tickled to have you back.
Third picture, top row, Velvet Kane is giving final instructions to his men, Scrub and Porky. He points to a map.
All right, now that's the setup. The spot is right in the mountains. You follow instructions, you shouldn't have any slip-up. And use the old jalopy. My big car is too well known.
A few hours later, second picture, bottom row, in the mountains, Scrub and Porky bring their car to a stop. Scrub says,
All right, this is the fork that Val marked. We'll watch from here and put the sign up when we see him coming.
Boy, you can sure see the road for a long way, Mir.
That night about dusk, Rusty and Tex in the truck approach the fork in the road. Tex squints ahead and says,
"Hey, looks like some kind of shine up ahead. Just out of the headlight beam, so I can't see it. Hop out and see what it says, Rusty."
Rusty hops out and then calls back,
"Hey, jeepers, Tex, it's a detour sign. We have to take the dirt road."
Rusty gets back in the truck, and slowly the big truck turns off the main road onto a narrow dirt road. The road winds in between some trees. It's very narrow, and the going is awfully slow.
Gee, Willikins, this road gets worse and worse.
You're right, Rusty. We gotta keep going. It's too narrow to turn around.
Rusty and Tex have been tricked, and they don't know
it. Yes, they turned off onto the old road, and they have no way to get off it. They'll have to keep going on straight ahead.
And Scrub and Porky, I'll bet you, are waiting somewhere in the trees behind with guns or something just to capture Rusty and Tex.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, I wonder if they really will be captured.
Well, that's something we'll have to wait until next week to find out. But now that's all the time I have. But before I go, here's that nice fellow with some more interesting information. Well, honey, and all you boys and girls, I've got to go now.
All right, Mr. Connie Wiggly Man, but I'll be waiting for you next week.
Okay, that's a date. And a date with all you boys and girls. Be sure to meet me with our little friend, Miss Honey, next week when I read Puck the Comic Weekly. For I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. I'll be back to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Don't forget, boys and girls, see you all next week. Your friend, the Comic Weekly Man. The Jolly Comic Weekly Man.